Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
One spring break vacation, when Christian and I were kids, our father announced that we were going to Canada. It was a very small motel that we stayed at in Hull, Quebec. It was very on the border. Not a place that most people go for vacation. Let's just say
that. It wasn't a five-star hotel.
It was not. And in fact, it was very, it just was small. And we were all staying in the same room. And I threw a little bit of a tantrum.
That might be the biggest understatement I've ever heard in my entire life.
This is embarrassing.
Because also on the way up, the whole time he was like, our dad.
He was building it up.
In your defense, our father was like, there's going to be a heated pool and a spa and a sauna and all this stuff. And you were getting more and more excited. And then he finally pulled into this place. And thought he was joking. He was like, you were like, very funny. You're just turning around. He's like, nope, we're here.
I couldn't believe it.
You got so mad, you threw yourself out of the car, onto the ground, and you were beside yourself.
Really?
I still remember really it. And then you had a book of matches, I remember, and you were flicking them in anger. You were lighting them.
Oh my God.
I've never seen a meltdown like
this. Well, that makes it sound like we were used to like...
Anyway, here's the show.
Oh God, it's okay.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I'm your currently embarrassed host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my more prudent... But although you would throw tantrums too.
No, I didn't.
Oh, God.
I was excited to stay in this place.
I need to clarify a few things. This makes it sound like we were rich kids growing up, that I'm used to, like, we never stayed in hotels that were fancy.
I don't think you have to explain this. I said that it was overhyped. It was oversold to you. My dad was fucking
like an affluenza kid.
He was messing with you.
Yeah, he was building it up. That was mean of him.
He tried. I don't know. I don't really know why he did that.
He was being a rascal. Pa could be a, like, mischief maker.
Yeah, he was being a rascal. He was getting you really excited about this place. And the place itself was fine. It was fine. It just wasn't nearly what he was describing. So your tantrum was, I would say, somewhat justified. And it was also not your typical reaction to things.
I was a kid.
You were a kid. You were what, 17, 18?
Shut up.
Here's the point, though. You ended up having a good time on the trip.
I did.
Yes or no?
I did.
And more importantly, that was the trip where you started to fall in love with Canada.
If you listen to the show, it's no secret that I do, and you're right, I love Canada.
As do I. You don't bother about Canada.
I love everything about it. I love the people.
You love butchering their accent.
Oh, I sure do. I sure do. I'm so sorry about that. If you're from Canada. But I also love you guys. So I it's with affection that I do the accent. And so today, I'm very excited. Why are we speaking about Canada?
Drum roll, please. I would say, the most Canadian guest we've had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of them. Kobe.
Yeah, but Kobe, he's more Canadian. I think I would say she doesn't seem as Canadian
that's
our guest
today. Yeah.
He is like, I think Canada... I think our guest.
Well, you know why? Because Kobe is an actress and had her accent's been more diluted over the years. Whereas Tom's, you know, hasn't as much.
So our guest today,
he's got that,
is the great Tom Green.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's got that very Canadian cadence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of goes up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Christian and I were such big fans of Tom Green that... there's a very embarrassing video out there of me and my friend Jeff Ostreicher, shout out, going across the country. We drove across the country, and we wanted to be like Tom Green. We filmed ourselves kind of messing with people, and I say it's embarrassing because we kind of had a shitty attitude with people, and some people didn't want to be filmed, and it's just not.
But you aspired to be like Tom Green.
We thought he was so funny, and there was something there was something so dangerous about what he did, wasn't there?
Punk rock,
yeah.
He was punk rock.
Yeah, he sure was. And when it comes to podcasting, he's one of the originals. Tom has really paved the way for a lot of pop culture.
Tom Green became famous in the 90s on The Tom Green Show on MTV.
Uh-huh.
And we were at the age where we just completely fell in love with that type of humor. And you guys talk a bit about where that comes from in him and how that developed in him. And
yeah, I was really curious to talk to him. I had been on a show. He was guest hosting for Larry King a few months earlier. I guess this is last summer when we were promoting this podcast. And he was very, so nice to me. He was so, like, very almost deferential and really seemed to like me. I don't know. Which I like. Selfishly, I was like, well, I like that he likes me. He talked about, at that time, him doing the podcast. So I'm glad it got to happen. And I'm glad we got to have him on. It was a thrill to talk to him. So yeah. Let's get into it. You'll hear our excitement, my excitement, when I talk to, I would say, the legend. Don't you think?
I will not dispute that.
All right. So here we go. My talk, eh?
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry, Canadian listeners. This is going to be brutal for you.
But it's all out of love. It's all out of love. As is my conversation with the legendary Tom Green.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Here we go. Yeah. All right. We are all systems go.
Now that we're quarantined, do you find yourself doing more FaceTimes than you normally do? I find myself talking to more people than I usually do.
Oh, yeah. I've been FaceTiming all my friends and family and a lot of FaceTime. I have a little tripod that I have my phone on. Pretty much I leave it on this tripod. It's one of those ones with the little bendy legs. You know, it's got It's got, and you can like wrap the legs around stuff, and it sort of like hangs on things. And I have it with me all the time. And then sometimes I'll go on my Instagram story. Do you do that? Go live on your Instagram story?
I've been watching them, and I find that I'm always paranoid that people are going to see me leaving the Instagram live. Can you see when people leave, or you just see when they're there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. It's a little bit of a privacy infringement on the viewer. Yeah, which is funny because I've had people pop on and then get mad that I didn't say hi to them because I just didn't notice they were there. But it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun when you're streaming live because you see your friends pop up and then you sort of start talking to them, and it's kind of cool. I'm in a weird situation right now, Justin. I don't get too deep into my situation, but I'm in a weird situation. I'm here in my house by myself, so it's kind of hilarious, but weird, you know?
Are you climbing the walls? You have this very elaborate setup, so you're able to broadcast. You have your own studio there, really, which I want to get into that, too, because you were ahead of the curve with all of that. I just heard you talking to Joe Rogan about it. Is it keeping you distracted and feeling, like, connected?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So basically, I started my podcast again, my actual audio podcast, like a month ago. I've been doing it every day.
Wow.
And it's keeping me busy.
Wow, every day?
Yeah, I mean, I take a day off here and there, but it's not a long podcast. I do, sometimes it's only 20 minutes long.
Okay.
Sometimes it's in an hour, depending who I'm talking to. Like I talked to a UFO, an alien abduction expert 2 days ago, who is the predominant expert in alien abduction in the world. Ugh. He's traveled around the world. He's removed objects that have been, you know, implanted into people's bodies. It's quite serious.
Do you believe in that stuff? What was it like being on the other end of that?
I believe in a lot of that stuff. I mean, I definitely believe in the possibility that there is intelligent life in the universe other than ours. or maybe even, you know, there is the only intelligent life in the universe might be on another planet. Who knows? But
right.
But I definitely do believe in that. Do I believe they're visiting? I'm not sure. I've seen no evidence of that, but I also believe.
But did he present evidence, this guy?
Yeah, oh, very much so. So he definitely is very much in full belief. First of all, his name's Derek Sims. He's alienhunter.org. is his website.
Alienhunter.org.
Yeah. And he was abducted as a child, told me about that. And then his son was also abducted. And he was an ex-CIA agent, as he told me he was.
Did any of this check out, for example, that?
Well, I don't really do a lot of research on my show. I just kind of took his word for it.
Right.
That's what it said on his website, though. But I mean, I believe him.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if it was on the internet.
Yeah, sure. So, but I believe him. I believe him.
What?
He seemed very credible. I mean, he definitely was very, very versed in all of this. So, yeah.
Tom, where do you find somebody like that? How'd you get in touch with somebody like that?
You know, we all go down these rabbit holes on the internet where I don't know if I'm sure you do.
Oh, sure.
I do.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a curious person, you go on the internet and you start exploring and looking at conspiracy theories. And
of course,
I also just interviewed one of the Russell Accord, one of the most world's most predominant Bigfoot Sasquatch researchers as well.
Oh,
so that was pretty.
Wow.
That was pretty fun. And
so, cool.
So it's cool. It's not all that kind of stuff on my show though. I've had a lot of.
Yeah.
You know, comedians. I'd love to have you call in sometime, and we could do.
I'd love that. People call up. That's how you've been doing it.
Yeah, it's just audio right now, but I'm going to put cameras on it. I've had, you know, Chris Angel called in, Dane Cook called in, Jeff Ross called in last week. Great comedians and people. So
that's funny. You mentioned, had a podcast earlier, right? So you had stopped doing it for a while.
Yeah. So I used to do this web streaming show in my house, which was not really officially a podcast because I don't think it was sort of early 2000s, and I don't think podcasting was really a thing yet. But it was with cameras, and we were streaming through the internet. And it was essentially a podcast. I was having up a lot of people on the show. And I was actually, so because I'm here quarantining right now, I kind of was going down memory lane, going through some hard drives. And I found this great clip of Joe Rogan on the show back in 2007. And I posted a clip of him essentially saying, "This is great, Tom, but we got to figure out how to make money off of this, you know?" And then here we are. He's got the biggest podcast in the world. And he saw that and reposted it and had me on yesterday. So
you sort of paved the way for a lot of this podcasting and internet talk shows. Even after you did the Tom Green show, Jackass started right after that. So it seems like you've had your finger on the pulse of this type of entertainment. What do you think is next? Where do you think things are headed? Because you're very prophetic when it comes to this.
I've always been into technology. I don't know why. I think my friends were really into computers and stuff when I was growing up. Because I'm from Ottawa, and I know you've been to Hull. We can talk about that in a bit. But
yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, a lot of my friends were in computer engineering, and my father actually, when he left the military, began working in computer engineering. And so we had some early sort of influences in that. And so I always liked looking at technology, and then I studied broadcasting in school and started playing with video cameras. So now, I don't know, it's interesting. It's probably got something to do with artificial intelligence, I would say, maybe some sort of virtual reality, some sort of virtual world. Maybe we'll actually be inside the talk show, living inside the talk show. I personally love interactivity. I love interactivity. So I love having lots of different types of interactivity on the show. So people calling in, people, you know, interacting with the show live. That could be where it's going.
Yeah, and you would do that with man on the street type stuff too. You were Joe touches on this in the podcast that you should all listen to. That we are communicating in such an odd way now. He was talking about this in the context of Instagram comments and responding to comments and stuff like that. It's just not a natural way to communicate. And how do you manage that communicating with people on the internet, not letting it get the best of you?
Okay, so I've got sort of a controversial way of handling this, okay? We're going to dip into some controversy right now, okay?
Oh, good.
So because some
we're
people say, okay, this is a democratic thing. You should be able to let people say whatever they want. And yeah, people should be able to go on your feed and, you know, call you an asshole or, you know, say mean things or be haters or trolls or whatever you want to call it. But I've always found, and I've sort of figured this out more and more over the years, that if you allow that to fester on there, if you, first of all, I never respond to negative people. I never respond. Mm-hmm. That was my initial thing. I used to started doing that a few years ago. Was I just wouldn't respond to the negative people. But now what I do is I just immediately block them. Mm-hmm. I immediately just block. And the blocking functions are kind of new. They've become much better than they were 10 years ago. And it's really changed things for the better. I just block them immediately. And I will block people for... You know, sometimes it's like right on the line. Like I'm not even sure if it's a negative comment, but it just kind of it just kind of made me feel a little strange. So I'll just block it.
You
I don't need to feel like that. You know.
Yeah. But I guess you're right. If you have the ability to curate your own positive environment, why not do that?
It's just the way I've been doing it. We're not politicians, right? We don't really have to. We don't have any responsibility.
That's
in
true.
The world, right?
That's true.
So we can just.
So it doesn't have to be a democracy.
I compare it almost more to real life. I remember I used to allow negativity into my life just in general. I would have friends that would be negative, and you'd be, why is that person always negative? But I would let them be in my life. And I learned as I got older, no, you don't need to have any negative energy in your life. You can sort of edit that out. If somebody's cool with you, you continue. But if someone's a prick, you know, just, you know, block them in the real world, you know? So that's kind of the way I look at it.
That's true. And Tom, speaking of real life, I mean, some of the things that people say on the internet, they would never, that kind of communication doesn't exist in real life because there's decorum, there's social etiquette, there are certain rules that people have to follow. Like you wouldn't walk up to a stranger and say, oh, I think your movie sucks or... You know, you're ugly. You know, it just doesn't.
They might walk up to me and say that, but I've had a few people walk up to me and say that about Freddie Got Fingered. But
is that true?
No, about Freddie Got Fingered, as I've had a few people that felt the need to actually walk right up to me and tell me, yeah. But usually on the internet, but sometimes in person, yeah.
Well, Tom, I have. I think version of that I have is a movie called Tusk. People will come up to me and say.
Oh, yeah, that's an amazing movie. I love that movie.
but people either love it or hate it. And the people that hate it, I always find that there's still. Maybe this is just wishful thinking, but there always feels like a degree of affection, even when they're saying, that movie is fucked up, or what the fuck? What were you thinking when you did that?
Uh-huh.
I wonder if Freddie Got Fingered it's the same kind of misplaced affection, because I do know that movie has become like a cult classic and way ahead of its time. And we've talked a little bit about it, I think, but it's amazing that they let you take the chances that you took in that movie. That's sort of...
It's funny how when you decide to make a choice and make something extremely polarizing and you go into it knowing that it's going to be extremely polarizing. But in my mind, I always thought, oh, this is so polarizing that people are going to realize that it's supposed to be polarizing and then everybody's going to love it, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's actually polarizing.
right.
Yeah. So, which is fine. So then you just kind of go, oh, okay, it worked. That's what was supposed to be polarizing. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't mean that polarizing. I thought it was going to flip right, over and become, you know,
not polarizing to a degree.
Did
the studio? Did they fight you on it? Because that was Fox, I think, right?
New Regency Fox.
New Regency.
Listen, they were really cool with me. They were really cool. They let me make that movie, and they let me direct it. I was not even directing it originally, and it was really cool.
Who was supposed to direct it?
There was no one really supposed to direct it. I wrote the movie with my friend, and then we started talking about other directors, and then I just kind of said, I really want to make this really like this, really weird, you know, and I really want to push the envelope with some of the scenes where, to me, it was more about the... Not so much about directing the actors, because honestly, I don't know a lot about acting. You know, like I was doing my goofy show. I'm not really an actor, I wanted to make the scenes crazy looking. You know, like I wanted the sausages to hang from the ceiling just right. You know, I wanted the cheese to drip just the right way it was supposed to drip. You know, so.
Oh, interesting. but you're working with some really incredible actors. So what? How did you approach that? Like Rip Torn, for example, who, rest in peace, Rip recently passed away. But he's a legend. I mean, what was it like?
I know you work with him too in Dodgeball, right?
Rip played Patches O'Houlihan in Dodgeball. He was a tough cookie.
Yeah. A tough cookie, which was cool because his character was a tough cookie too. He was playing my dad.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed directing, actually, and working with him and Julie Haggerty and all the people
Eddie
in the
K.
movie
Thomas.
Was fun because it was kind of interesting because I don't know. I enjoy working with people and talking to people, and Rip had a good time. Rip told me he enjoyed that process.
Oh, really?
He would go out on the weekend. He would go out on the weekend. We were in Vancouver shooting it, and he would go out on the weekend and like catch salmon. And go fishing, and then you come in, he'd bring giant salmon, and we'd be eating fresh salmon at lunch, you know. So he was cool, that, man. He was cool. He was tough cookie, though. I mean, there were times where, you know, I was like, okay, you're actually really, really mad at me right now. This is not about about, you know, when things were taking too long or whatever, you know. But that's cool. You know, he was an older guy at that point, so you kind of wanted to respect the fact that you wanted to get him through it, you know.
Did you feel some sort of pressure to, because you had such a clear persona and you were so beloved by the younger generation, did you feel pressure to maintain that level of edginess and extreme comedy in the movies, in those movies?
It just depends. Certainly that was what I was trying to continue with Freddy Got Fingered. There were some movies that I really did get into the idea of trying to immerse myself into, you know, a comedic character. Like I did this movie Stealing Harvard with Jason Lee, and I got like false teeth put in, and I, you know, really kind of grew my hair out. I kind of adopted a little bit of a character and an accent and things like that. So that was really cool. I did feel that a lot more outside of the work. Like if I were to go on The Tonight Show, I felt like, I can't just go on and just talk about what I'm doing. I got to go on there and do something insane. Right? So there's a lot of things where I kind of look back and I think to myself, I should have probably just chilled a little bit, you know. It was this sort of youthful kind of desire to just sort of be so completely insane all the time. It did definitely confuse a lot of people, which was, to me, funny at the time, but now I'm a little older, I look back at it and I go, maybe I could have sometimes gone on and just kind of been normal, you know, been more who I really am. I'm kind of semi-normal in my real life, you know, normal at all when I was doing that stuff, so.
Right, but at the time, but how much of that was just youthful, like, exuberance, and how much of it was you pushing the envelope, or deliberately leaning into a persona or a character, I wonder?
Oh, yeah. No, it was definitely that. My friends and I were trying to fuck up the system. You know, we really had this sort of desire to really go, you know, be nuts. And I think sometimes it might have pushed people in the wrong way because it was like, you know, it was always on or whatever. But now I've kind of realized I did stand up when I was a kid, but I wasn't really doing, like when I was a teenager in early 20s, but I wasn't really doing stand up for a few years when I was on MTV. And I started doing that again. That's really what I do full time until now. My whole year was just sort of canceled, which is, everybody's out of work right now. So it's a tough thing for the country and for everybody. But you know, I have this outlet now where I can get up on stage now and be, you know, a wacko, you know, a goofball, and just kind of completely have that energy. And then when I do my podcast or when I talk to you, I can just, you know, give you an honest answer and, you know, have fun with it, but not necessarily be trying to confuse everybody all the time, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of people also, I mean, I remember seeing that side of you and being surprised by it when you got cancer and you made the decision to talk about it publicly. That was like such an extreme pivot, because I was such a fan of yours, of your comedy, but I had never seen you be earnest and or not earnest, serious, I guess. And was shifting into a serious mode challenging? Was it scary? I think most people had only known you to be funny. What was that like?
Well, first of all, it was very strange for sure. You know, I had been working away in my little show up in Canada for years as a public access show, right? And we worked hard on it. My friends and I, we all worked for years, for many, many years, almost 10 years. So when I got the cancer, it was real shitty. You know, it's shitty getting cancer. You know, it's not a fun thing to get cancer.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
But it's even worse when you've been working towards getting your show on the air for 10 years and you got it on the air and everything's going great. We had just moved from New York to Los Angeles and all the a lot of the crew on the show, producers, camera people, you know, the show was doing great. We had a hit show. So it was, we were like, okay, we're moving to LA. We're going to be doing this for years. People gave up apartments, you know,
people left
New York to come out to LA.
Wow.
And then I got to LA and in 6 months, within 6 months, I got the testicular cancer.
Oh my God.
And,
thanks
and
a
then
lot,
also
LA.
I thought, okay, we'll do one last show. It'll give everyone another couple of months of work, all the editors and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Also, you know, we realized this will be a good way to, you know, talk about balls on television. It'll be kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, we can get away with talking about balls on television.
That's never,
that's never a bad thing. And last but not least, maybe it would even help some people too. So we did it. We just filmed everything.
Wow. Were you ever apprehensive about that? Was that a difficult decision to make? Because that seems like such a revealing thing. It's one thing to be funny around people and mess with people and stuff, but when it comes to something that personal, what was that like coming up, wrestling with that decision?
Yeah, it was not an instant decision. Because I did think, and I don't think that now, but at the time I thought, geez, this could be really embarrassing. You know, like they're taking my right testicle.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to know that I only have one testicle.
Right.
I mean, that's embarrassing. And we were always trying to think of the craziest thing to do, even for years up to that point, whether it was, you know, paint your parents' car or whatever weird thing we would do on the show. So now it was kind of like, this is the craziest thing ever. We have to film this. And then what took over also is that, you know, it is the most prevalent form of cancer in young guys 15 to 35 years old. So everyone watching my show was 15 to 35 years old. And so we raised a lot of awareness for it. And I tell you, man, it's when I tour around the country, not often, not a month goes by now. It used to be even more frequent, but not a month goes by now where some man will walk up to me with his wife,
uh-huh,
and they'll be very emotional. And they'll say, you know, when I was 30 years old, I went to get to the doctor because of that show, you know? And so that's happened countless times. I've gotten lots of letters and things. So
I bet.
So it's cool. And anyone listening, you know, if you're feeling any sort of discomfort, not just in your testicle, but anywhere in your body, I just say go to the doctor right away, because like if you don't get stuff early, that's when you kind of are in trouble, but it's highly curable if you go right away. So,
were you at all religious at the time, Tom? Were you thinking about the afterlife? Did you ever go there, like that extreme?
Yeah, I actually did. I actually did have a moment really getting into it here, Justin. You're going to make me cry like Barbara Walters does to her guests.
Well, this is always our goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if they're fake tears, take it.
You know, there was a moment for sure where I was so upset about it. And this was early on in the process of realizing this. I was actually in the shower, and I remember sitting there, and I remember like the hot water pouring down over my face, and I just remember thinking and praying to God, like for real, like actually praying to God. And you know, I grew up, you know, we went to church when we were a kid. When I was a kid, we went to Sunday school, but we were not like overly religious family, but you know, we had Sunday school.
Catholic, Tom?
Protestant, one side's Presbyterian, Anglican. I forget which one I am. That's how religious I am.
Mm-hmm.
But here it was a moment where I was genuinely, without any sense of irony, of course, you know, praying to God, saying, "Geez, I just would like to get through this and live." And you know, and then look, I lived, and I'm still here talking to you. So I do actually allow that to be something that I think about sometimes, that, you know, it worked, you know, it did work. I did pray to God to live and survive that ordeal, and things have been good, and so I don't discount that.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over. Because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
Your parents at the time, I remember thinking too, when, because they were on the special, the cancer special, and I remember thinking, God, these people have been, you put them through such, they had such patience, but you really tested their patience. And I remember thinking, there's a real sweetness and affection that these people have for one another. I was really struck by that.
I have a very close relationship with my parents, and it's kind of funny because people really often misconstrue some of those bits, and they say, man, Matt, you were so mean to your parents, but they don't quite understand that. I mean, I know some of it was a little over the top, but you know, we always had this sort of joking relationship. Like, you know, my parents are very funny at the dinner table, you know, when you're funny people kind of around each other, always razzing each other. And it kind of evolved slowly too. Like they were happy that I was doing something. Like I was in school taking broadcasting. I was trying to do something with my life. So, and the other thing is the videos were really spread out further. My parents disagree with this now when I talk about it. I say, oh, we only went and did I say, we only did something every once every couple of months. And they said, no, it was every Wednesday fucking night you'd barge in. And, you know, but it was further apart than it appeared on MTV where we were hammering them every episode because, you know, it was sort of 4 or 5 years worth of stuff all clumped into like, you know, a couple of months. So,
but they also seemed like they had very dry, strikes me as very Canadian, their sense of humor. Oh, Tom, sure. They seemed funny, but very dry and very dry. So maybe people were misconstrued that as well for being annoyed or upset. I'm sure I did. In terms of doing bits like that with your parents, and I know you had mentioned that when you painted their car, more than painted their car, I mean, it was called the Slutmobile, right? I think. Yeah.
It was a nice painting.
Yes.
It was a nice painting.
Yes. It was like a ridiculously graphic sexual painting on the side of their car. And I think it was your father who refused to take the car. He started walking.
Yeah,
that bit struck me as like, okay, now he's in trouble. They're genuinely upset. How long would their anger last? Like with something like that, for example, how long did it take for them to laugh about it, let's say?
You know, and I don't even know if it's PC anymore to say the Slutmobile. I think we could get away with that in 1999, but I don't even know if we can say that anymore.
Can.
So I'm at least acknowledging that, but and apologizing for that, I guess, for that, just saying the word. It's not being insensitive, but that's what it was called. You know, the thing is, there's a secret to that video that did not get seen on camera, which is kind of a fun little, I think, piece of magic that makes it a little less mean than it appeared, because what we did was, this was one of our first bits where we actually had a little bit of a budget. My parents had a 1992 Honda Accord. So we went, we bought an extra hood, you know, an extra hood to a 1992 Honda Accord, because we realized it was going to take too long for the paint to dry, because it's that beautiful 1970s van airbrushing art, you know, like very hyper-realistic, beautiful paint art. You know, it looks very beautiful. Yes. The ladies on the car looked very beautiful.
Yes.
They were, right? And so we had it sent off to this guy just up north of Ottawa in this little town called Greeley, who you know, he paints vans. And probably like work had dried up a little bit because people weren't really painting, you know, airbrushing their vans as much anymore in the early 90s. So he's probably happy for the work at the time, you know.
But Scooby-Doo had been off the air.
Yeah. So we had him do it, and it was, so we bought the paint job was like $200, and the hood itself was $250. Oh. We painted it. We had it all done. And then in the middle of the night, we just swapped out the hoods.
Oh, right? Wow.
We swapped out the hoods. And then Dad got mad. And then Mom got mad. And then Mom left all these answering machine messages on my answering machine, right? Because we had answering machines back then.
Uh-huh.
And then they got mad. And we filmed them until they were kind of like... until it wasn't funny anymore, basically,
right.
Which was
right.
Well, it was kind of a long time, actually. Like, it was not like we didn't reveal like within 10 minutes. Oh, we're just joking. Bring the other.
Yeah.
It was like a good like eight or 12 hours of getting yelled at.
Oh my God!
When we realized that we had enough footage and it probably was just not funny anymore, we brought the hood out. And,
did they ever within those eight like on hour seven or eight? Did they ever say, "Oh, Tom, put the camera down"? Did they ever go after the camera?
Oh yeah, for sure. And my mom was really worried because her mother and her sister were coming to visit that day from another city, and they were driving, and there was a ticking clock of tension because they were going to be there soon. It was a 6-hour drive, and they were getting closer.
Your grandmother, I imagine she's a very sweet, genteel,
very sweet
Canadian
yeah.
woman.
Yeah, she was very sweet, yes.
But
we didn't show that aspect on it. We just kind of didn't show that part, which you know, debatably would have been funny to show the end. You know,
right.
Like on old candid camera shows, they always showed at the end. No, it's okay. Look, they're all behind the curtain. It's okay. You know, we didn't do
well,
that.
I wonder that about. I've been so into the show Impractical Jokers since I just discovered it, which is nice because it's been on for like 8 years.
Oh,
now,
wow. So yeah. You'll be able to fill your whole quarantine with that show. They're on like season 200 right now or something.
I know. It's been keeping me so entertained. But I always wish that they would then show a little bit more behind the curtain. They do sometimes, but I always am curious how the people respond once they realize it's a hidden camera show. And I'm always curious about that aspect of it. Like, how do they react?
That's the thing. We never hid our camera. Rarely. A couple of times we did. But to us, it was like the camera was a character in the show, right? It was kind of like, who's this kid with a camera sticking a camera in my fucking face? And it would make
people
even madder, you know? The first bit that we shot when we went to New York was called Undercutter's Pizza, and he chased me with a hammer in Long Island and tried to break our camera. So
that's right. Yeah. He ruined your pizza, right? Didn't he?
We staked out the pizza joint. I was dressed as a pizza guy. It's highfalutin stuff here, you know. Like it's lofty material. I followed the pizza guy. And then when he got to the place where he was delivering the pizza, I walked up with the pizza guy who didn't know why I was following him. I had a plain pizza and a fishing tackle box. Because a fishing tackle box is a perfect thing to put pizza condiments in because it's all divided into those little sections for the cheese and the mushrooms.
Yes.
Right? And then I tried to make the guy a pizza and then sell it for cheaper, undercutting, and he got mad. But the thing is, it was supposed to be the pizza guy was supposed to get mad, but the guy I delivered it to actually got mad. This New York accented, Long Island accent guy. He was working on his car, and he came at me with a hammer, and it was fun.
That's right. That must have been terrifying. I mean, things like that. Was that scary?
The only reason it got a little scary was because it was the first time I'd worked with this camera guy because he was an MTV camera guy. And I tried to explain to him, like, if someone starts chasing us, like, we've got to back off. Uh-huh. And he didn't understand the rhythm of that. He just sort of held his ground and wanted to keep filming. And I don't think he quite realized that the guy was actually going to hit him with the hammer.
He wasn't a willing participant in the...
You hear me actually yelling in the bit, Matt, his name was Matt. I'm like, Matt, this is the line, Matt.
That.
This is the line, Matt. Yeah.
Did you notice the difference between people you would play pranks on and do bits with in Canada versus the Americans?
I did, yeah, for sure. That was when I noticed right there at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, Americans, they're a little more edgy than us Canadians.
Well, Canadians probably have a higher threshold, maybe a little bit more patient.
It's interesting because, I mean, I don't know how far into the weeds we want to get into this subtlety of this, but it is interesting because it did actually change the comedy because in Canada, people would sort of let it play out and it became more of an absurd, surreal kind of interaction. Whereas in the States, it became more of a angry interaction. And, you know, sometimes was actually far, far more exciting actually shooting the bits in the States, but it was a little bit more... You know, you were a little bit more ready to run, basically. I had to run a few times.
Were there ones that you were like, even for me, this is too much, and it just won't be funny?
There was a bit that they wanted me to do my fucking friends. Uh-huh. But this was literally more of a stunt. They wanted to mimic that bit where, remember the guy tied a bunch of balloons to a lawn chair and then he like flew like helium no. balloons? It was like no. a guy in like the 80s tied like a uh-huh. whole bunch of weather balloons to a lawn chair full of helium. Yeah. And flew. They made a documentary about him, and he had a pellet gun, and his idea was he was going to shoot one balloon at a time and then come down and, at the end and all that. They wanted me to do that, and I said, no, I'm not doing that.
Did your fame ever overtake the man on the street? Kind of like exposure. Did the exposure ever get in the way of the comedy?
Well, that's why we moved to Los Angeles, because New York was just too compressed. The people were just too many people everywhere. So you couldn't really walk around with a camera without getting kind of called out immediately. So we moved out to LA and we'd drive around in a van with tinted windows and wait till we found somebody who looked like they were, you know, over 60, and then we get out and make fun of them.
Really?
You know?
Well, I wonder that.
I mean, it kind of turned into that. There's a reason why there's a lot of elder people being goofed on because right. they weren't watching MTV, so they didn't really react the same way.
I remember driving cross country with my friend Jeff. We wanted to be like you, do what you were doing. We filmed everything, and I recently went back and I saved it all. I converted it to DVD recently, and I watched some of it, and I was actually kind of, at the time, I remember thinking it was just, we were so funny, and, oh, we're like Tom Green, and we're so edgy, and when I watched it recently, I was sort of, I was kind of ashamed.
That's kind of how I feel when I look at my old stuff, too.
Oh, really? I wondered.
I think it's natural to look at anything that you did over 20 years ago and scratch your head and say, what the fuck was I thinking?
Do you regret, which ones, now I'm curious, which ones you regret?
Well, I don't really regret any of them because, I mean, the thing is at the time we would say to ourselves, okay, this was the writing process. We would say, okay, let's try to think of something that you're going to regret in 20 years, and then we'll go do that. So that was usually how we came up with our bits.
Oh, that's funny.
So it'd be
that's
kind of disingenuous of me to, like, regret them now. There was always still a sense of, I feel like we had a sort of an ethical kind of moral compass to the show. I always did feel like if it crossed over into a certain place, then it became too mean. I sometimes see that today, like, not to like, you know, be like the old guy to these kids today with their pranks, you know, but when I see some of the pranksters on YouTube, a lot of them are amazing. So many hilarious things on YouTube now. I love it. But there's occasional person that you see who takes it to a very mean place, a very dark place.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're misinterpreting it. And that's their shtick. But to me, it's not funny at that point. It's just kind of mean. And I like it when it's kind of innocent. I always like to feel like if you walk out of it and you go, even though I was instigating it, I was actually the one that was kind of the one you're worried about, you know?
Yes, like, so. Exactly. Well, the undercutters.
Yeah.
One of the bits that always amazed me that you would get away with was the poo on the microphone. I couldn't believe that you could get it so close to somebody. And just as a sociological experiment that people, when they were on camera, they didn't have as much of an aversion to poo. What did you attribute that to?
I believe people were less media literate back then. So we didn't all have phones cell phones with cameras in them. We weren't all making videos. We didn't have Instagram pages with videos FaceTime and all that stuff. So people, when they had a camera pointed at them in 1999, were pretty nervous. You know, they were pretty nervous. They were like, oh my God, someone's asking me to do an interview and they're capturing my image on a camera. Well, how do I look? And so because people weren't as media literate and we took a little poo and we put it, and it was real poo, dog poo.
It was,
it was what kind of poo was it? It was poo of the dog, actually. And where did you get the poo? Oh, well, we went out on the shoot and we just looked around on the ground till we found.
And
we spread a little dollop of it on the top of our Electra Voice 635A microphone, right? There's probably still a mic at MTV with poo in the grooves. When you get poo in the grooves of your mic. Yeah. But anyways, but what was fun was, you know, I kind of did realize that if I made eye contact with the people, held that gaze and kind of slowly moved the mic up close, I could get it right up under their nose. And you would even see the nose twitching a little because you could tell they were smelling the poo.
It's unmistakable.
Under their nose. Yeah. Right? So, but they never broke character because, you know, I was asking them questions about like Pete Sampras or something like that. You know, I was asking questions about like, tell me, what do you think of Pete Sampras? And they're like, well, Pete's playing pretty good right now. And you can see their nose twitching. And,
well, that's where your acting chops came into play because that's a performance. And that's to maintain that level of straight, just to maintain a straight face.
Yeah, because I edited the show for years, and in the first few years of editing the show, I would ruin so many of them by cracking up. You know, I just sometimes just couldn't believe what was happening. I'd just start cracking up, and then it would ruin it, because then the person would realize that I was joking with them, whereas once I learned how to not crack up, you could really string people along for a long time without them even realizing that you were joking because they were sort of nervous on camera, not just with the poo, but with everything, you know? Like you're
right.
You could say the most absurd things. So, yeah, it was crazy times, fun times.
So you had been doing stand-up. You put it on hold for a while. The show happened. You have a huge career as an actor then. And then when do you return to stand-up? And why do you return to stand-up? You just missed it?
I just started feeling like I wanted to do it again. And I started jumping up and writing some jokes. And the first night I did it again, jumped up at the Comedy Store. And it was, you know, on a slow night, and I just started doing it. But I mean, immediately fell right back into place, and I love the energy of the crowd. I love people too. I love being around people who, you know, who like this show and who like to laugh. And so now I get to go on the road, and not right now, but I'm on the road. The last 10 years, I've been on the road. I've been played in every city in the U.S., every city in Canada. I've toured Australia, all over the place, England. It's exciting.
Are there any vestiges of like post-cancer, Tom? I mean, did you become more diligent about germs and getting sick again after you had such a scare like that?
Well, I mean, absolutely. That's the reason why I legitimately have not left the house for 5 weeks. Other than yesterday, I did leave. But yeah, I mean, I'm very, very cautious. I'm very cautious about things now because I've been sick. I think it did help me actually prepare for this.
And your parents, your family's okay? They're all okay?
Yeah, everyone's good, and all socially isolating together with my brother at my brother's place. So everyone's doing great.
Your brother's in Ottawa?
Yeah, he's up in Ottawa. Yeah,
I remember going there as a kid. My dad was a teacher. He taught philosophy at this college, Fairfield University, and our vacations usually revolved around one of his work trips. But it was usually not the most exciting place. It wasn't like we were going to Disney World or, you know, things like that. But although we did go to Disney World, so when I say that.
And one year you went to Ottawa.
I went to Ottawa. Ottawa. And we were like, oh, that's exciting. It's the capital of Canada. Uh-huh. I was really into geography. I thought that was cool. Maybe we'd see some. And we stayed at a place called Hull. I don't know how many of our listeners know. What do you think of when you think of Hull, Ontario?
Okay, well, Hull is actually in Quebec.
Quebec.
So, because Ottawa's a border with Ottawa's in Ontario, and Hull is in Quebec, and it's on the border.
Right.
So it's like it sort of feels like the same city. The Ottawa River splits through the city, and on one side is Hull, Quebec. And the thing about Hull, which is a big deal growing up, especially back in the 80s and early 90s, is that you know, Quebec has a lower drinking age, okay? So when you're in high school in the 80s,
like 14.
And the drinking age in Quebec was 18, but they would still let you into the bars when you were 16 over there. So we in high school could go over to bars in Quebec. It was kind of we grew up fast
right the
up
river.
There in Canada. Yeah, right to go over the river. Not only that, but back then they've changed the drinking hours. Now it's evened out. But back then it was open till 3 in the morning in Quebec, and the bars would close at 1 in the morning in Ontario. So it used to be at 1 o'clock in the morning, everybody would drive over to Hull. So it was a raging party strip over there of nightclubs, and it was just madness back in the 80s and 90s. And so we grew up drinking a lot and doing a lot of goofy shit way too young over there in Hull.
Were your parents strict about stuff like that? Did you have to sneak around, tiptoe around?
They actually weren't strict about stuff like that. I mean, they didn't know I was doing it, of course. But if they'd found out, you know, the couple of occasions, you know, where they found out I'd been drinking or whatever, they were not totally shocked. They were pretty easygoing about that kind of thing. So.
And were you friends with Glenn around this time?
Yeah, Glenn, we met at a college radio station, and So probably, you know, that's Glenn and Phil, who I'm very close Phil, with sure. Phil, who was the guy in the window who drank the coffee.
Yeah, Phil Giroux.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's so awesome that you know Phil Giroux. I'm gonna tell Phil you said what's up, okay? He's gonna think that's
amazing. I can see him so clearly. He was always laughing too. He was such a funny cutaway. He was such a funny person to cut away to because he always kind of had a similar reaction than you.
Phil and Glenn, like, they didn't actually have any skin in the game because they didn't even really want to do the show that much, right? Like,
was funny about it.
They had real jobs, but they were having fun with it. Yes. They'd come along, and then it was just kind of like silly, you know?
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Well, these are going to be quick, really quick, short questions. What, Tom, is your most commonly used emoji, would you say? What is your go-to emoji that you find yourself using?
Oh, I like that. Well, lately it's been the smiley face with the mask on.
Sure, yeah.
Probably just the smiley face, I think, is the most commonly.
Yeah. If you could be a professional athlete, what sport would you play and why? I think I know this, but my guess would be...
I'd probably say skateboarding.
Skateboarding, yeah.
That was always the dream to be...
Really?
A great skateboarder. When I was a little kid, it was hockey, but I got to sort of be a pseudo-professional skateboarder, sort of like I got an honorary pro model with Tony Hawk's Birdhouse skateboards, but I wasn't really a professional skateboarder. Well, so to be able to actually do the things that they do in a skateboard would be something that is a dream of mine for sure.
Well, there was a lot in terms of what you were doing, there seemed like a lot of overlap with skateboarding, like video skateboarding culture.
That's where it all came from, for sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, just there and Letterman. Letterman and skate videos.
Yeah.
That was sort of the,
And you say hockey at the time, were the Ottawa Senators a team at the time, or were you a Canadiens? Would it be Montreal? What
was the closest? So when I was a kid, we didn't have the Senators. The Senators didn't come in until 91-92 season. So growing up, when I was a little kid, I would love the Montreal Canadiens.
Uh-huh.
It was Guy Lafleur was the, the
Bork.
And then
Ray Bork.
But then I also liked the New York Islanders because Ottawa's pretty close to New York. You know, it's 45-minute drive to New York State from Ottawa. Ogdensburg, New York is 45-minute drive from New York.
Wow.
From Ottawa. So New York Islanders, Mike Bossy, Brian Trottier, Denny Potvin, that was the dynasty.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, the Edmonton Oilers were very well-loved back then
because
it was the Wayne Gretzky years.
Yeah. Yep. If you could have one snack food, what would it be, your go-to snack food?
Probably pizza.
What's your favorite movie of all time, if you have one?
Well, I used to always say Jaws. I don't even know if that's true anymore, but I do love that movie. I think I'll stick with it. Jaws.
I love Jaws. Somebody wrote into the show because we've been doing these midweek quarantine episodes where we, you might be into this, where we have a hypothetical question we try to answer. And so somebody, we were encouraging people to write in with their own hypotheticals. And one was, would you rather be in a swimming pool, a murky swimming pool with a great white shark or the same size forest with a grizzly bear? And you have to get through the length of the forest, and you have to get through the length of the swimming pool.
I'd go with the forest. I'm more comfortable in the forest with a grizzly bear. Yeah,
same thing. Yeah,
yeah.
That's exactly.
I think the grizzly bears tend to. I mean, I know sharks aren't attacking people regularly as much as, but I think this, the pool seems so much smaller. I think the odds of encountering right. the shark generally probably are much higher than in
That's
a
true.
Forest. Bears tend to leave you alone if you don't bother them, so.
Okay. Yeah, but that's
shark would probably be pretty hungry in that pool just all by itself. You know, probably be looking for something to eat by that point, by the time you got in there.
But I also think because I think that's how effective that movie is. I think it had such a dramatic impact on it, rewired me somehow, and it was so effective. I mean, it really tapped into this, like, you know, real primal fear. I don't think I'll ever escape. Such a
yeah,
good movie.
For sure. And then, you know, the other thing is I often throw in a comedy there too. So, you know, Airplane also would maybe, you know, be you know, in it for different reasons, you know. And also the hardest I've ever laughed in my life, okay, while watching a movie, it's a tie between Monty Python's Meaning of Life and when they come to take your liver with the liver donor's card. But I'm still using it that moment. I was 12 years old. I just couldn't fucking believe what I was looking at.
Uh-huh.
And believe it or not, Weekend at Bernie's, I had this moment watching Weekend at Bernie's. I was watching it. I was probably 17 years old. Uh-huh. I was watching it on VHS with my parents in our living room. And the scene where, you know, Bernie's dead the whole time, and they're trying to keep the party going. And then now they're in the speedboat, and Bernie falls out the back, but the anchor rope gets tied to his leg, and he keeps hitting the water skiing poles. Ping, ping, ping. And it was just so outrageous that I started laughing. But then what happened was I started laughing so hard and so uncontrollably that I realized I was annoying my parents and ruining the movie, which made it even funnier. And it became a quadruple can't stop laughing
That's
loop.
Very rare.
An inescapable loop of laughter to the point that my parents were like, oh, fuck off.
Oh,
you
Tom.
Can't be there. Fucking
I can hear them.
They walked upstairs That's and I kept funny. Laughing for a good solid 20 minutes and we didn't even finish the fucking movie.
That's really funny. That's funny. And both of those answers make such... They really make sense. At Weekend at Bernie's, there are elements of, talk about like irreverence. I mean, the whole thing's about this fucking corpse dragging
it was
around
just
this corpse.
Yeah, this sort of the shocking, gross out elements of it. I'd never really seen that kind of stuff. And Monty Python too, the gross, the liquid and the, you know, the fat guy at the end vomiting and all that. I loved it. Growing up in Canada, they played Flying Circus, the show, on the CBC every night. So it was sort of like constantly being pumped into our brains. I think that's why we're all nuts up there. You know, we had SCTV,
and
Monty
funny.
Python, and Benny Hill were playing on TV constantly my entire life. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes sense because you came of age during the Kids in the Hall, when the Kids in the Hall were becoming popular. And
them, of course, as well. Yeah, they were huge, and I love those guys.
I love those guys. And Bruce McCulloch, he directed that movie, right? Stealing Harvard, that you were in. You got to work with him.
He did, yeah. He did. So. He directed that, and also Superstar, which was the first movie set I was ever on. That was before MTV. I had a little part in that. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, if you had to live somewhere else, Tom, where would it be?
Probably Costa Rica, yeah. I'd love it there. It's very peaceful there. I mean, it's the mm-hmm. only thing is it's a great. I love going there to take a break, but it's very quiet there. But I love nature. I love being around, you know, the monkeys and
you
the animals.
You must love the monkeys. I was going to say you must love the monkeys.
I love the monkeys, and the fishing is great down there, right? We were going to talk about fishing.
We're going to talk about fishing. What do you catch down there? I imagine they have bass. They have largemouth bass everywhere. Kind of right.
In Costa Rica, it's ocean fishing, so it's more, and I don't do a lot of fishing down there, but you catch red snapper and small mahi-mahi and tuna and things like that. But most of my fishing experience has grown up in lakes in Canada, kind of like very similar to where you are. And
me too.
And so it was a lot of largemouth bass and a lot of northern pike.
Yeah. Muskellunge.
And lots of leopard frogs and bullfrogs.
Oh, yes. You know,
I like catching frogs when I was a kid. I love watching your Instagram because I see so many things that it just reminds me of like what I do. You know, like you always have cool frogs and fish, and you're fishing a lot on there. And it's very similar kind of thing to where my parents live in Quebec. So.
Oh, that's cool. If you could have dinner with three people, dead or alive, whom you've never met, who would they be?
Well, I'm going to pick three dead people because I, you know.
Yeah, why not?
Probably the live people I might get a, still get a chance to actually do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, so. You don't want to waste your.
I don't want to waste choice. One on a live person. Mm-hmm. I would say Johnny Carson.
Yes, yeah. Do you do a Johnny Carson impression?
That is wild stuff.
Oh, that's pretty. Wow, that's good. That's weird. Yeah.
It was cold outside in Los Angeles today, Justin.
That's good.
It was so cold, I saw a pigeon running into Kenny Rogers' Roasters to surrender.
yes!
That is... Thank you, Ed. So, that is some wild stuff. That is wild.
That's really good. You know, you have
my one impression.
Well, your cadence, your natural cadence is not dissimilar to his, I think.
That's, I've watched a lot of Johnny over the years, read everything about him. I find him very interesting.
Yeah.
There's great books about him, and he had such an interesting life. And in some ways, he's a little bit of a cautionary tale, I think, about, you know, as much as I loved him, he was really so devoted to his work that he didn't necessarily have the
family,
the happiest life in the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Be careful what you wish for.
You kind of got to learn to, like, make sure you kind of, like, divide, you know, compartmentalize things in your life so you're not so driven that it's just about the show or whatever, or they're just about the career. But I loved him, and I loved his comedy. I think it's the greatest.
Was there a time in your lifetime where that was true, that you felt that way, that looking back, like, oh, I was too consumed?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think when I was in my 20s and 30s for a bit more so. I've really, in the last 10 years, I think I've become a lot. Well, I've been thinking about this, and I'm thinking, like, I was very stressed about the future when I was young, because I was like, oh my God, if this doesn't work out, what am I going to do with my life? But now I'm 48 years old, and there's just so much less of my life to ruin, right? So,
right, that's true.
It's like, well, what if I screw this up? Well, it's sort of over anyway, so yeah, it doesn't really matter that much.
That's true. It's kind of comforting.
Yeah, if things went to shit when I was 30, though, man, you know, it'd be a long time to fucking...
Yeah, I put a lot of pressure on myself. That's funny. I wonder if that's similar.
Yeah, I think as we get older, things just, you just get more relaxed, and you start to roll with the punches more and more and more, and I feel better about things now than I ever have. So Johnny Carson, two others, right?
Yeah.
Johnny Carson, Jesus. I want to get a woman in there because, you know, you want to have to sit dinner with three dudes. So, you know, Johnny Carson, Jesus, and Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, Jesus and Johnny and I all competing for her attention. She ends up with Jesus at the end of the meal.
Ironically,
bye, Johnny. Bye, Tom. Let's go, Jesus.
Girls love nice guys.
Yes. Nice.
If you could, classic Jesus, if you could be one age for the rest of your life physically, what would you pick?
Physically or mentally and emotionally too?
No, you have your own, the mental capacity you have now, but in a whatever body.
Oh, okay. Body. I'd probably say 22 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, the Muppet who played the sax.
Oh, yeah. God, I was just looking him up. He was great.
He never said anything. He just went, meh, at the end.
Yeah, like Zoot. His name
was
like
But he had the cool
Zoot.
Shades and the hat.
Yes. What the fuck was his name?
Now, you know, but let me give you another answer because I don't know if that's
Zoot.
Kind of
a, I think it is Zoot.
I might be the Swedish chef. Oh. The Swedish chef.
Oh, I love the Swedish chef. Yeah.
Does the gibberish? I loved it. I couldn't believe it. I think that was actually the one that really I loved.
Yeah, me too. okay, if you could be reincarnated as a non-human animal, what would you pick?
An elephant.
Why?
I just think they're highly intelligent. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know everything about elephants, but I know they have a lot of... family structure, they have a lot of social structure between them. So it just seems like it would be not as boring as being, say, like, you know, I don't know, like a turtle or something.
Yeah. Yes. You, and do they have really good memories? Is that true? A pachyderm? That's the...
I think they do. And I, you know, there's these things I've watched online that are just incredible about, like, there was one story, I think it was in South Africa, but it was somewhere in Africa, but the elephants were... endangered, and a farmer kept them in a sanctuary and saved them from these poachers.
Huh.
And he kept these elephants there for many years. And then when the threat of the poachers was gone, these elephants left.
Uh-huh.
20 years later or something like that. I'm not getting the dates right. But
yeah.
this gentleman died, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the elephants somehow knew it.
Wow.
Sensed it.
Oh,
and they
God.
Came back.
No.
And they had a sort of a ritualistic type of, it's on the YouTube, there's a whole thing about it.
Oh my God.
And they came back and they did a ritualistic kind of,
like a ceremony,
you know, mourning for his wife. And they were there for many, many days mourning this man's death. And then so I found that kind of a beautiful thing.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm very interested in animals. There's also another incredibly interesting animal is a sperm whale.
Huh.
They're starting to do a lot of research about sperm whales. And they've discovered that the sperm whale has more complex language than human language.
Oh my God. Yeah. I have a friend who's a nature photographer who goes to Sri Lanka and films them. And he has to use a snorkel. He can't use scuba equipment because the bubbles.
Exactly. Because they're afraid of the scuba tanks. Yeah. They're just, yeah, I love that. I find that fascinating.
I don't know how to make the pivot from this. Which golden girl do you most identify with? Dorothy, Blanche, Rose, or Sophia?
B. Arthur. It was the B. Arthur character.
That's Dorothy. You're a Dorothy.
Yeah, B. Arthur, for sure.
Okay. So is Christian. My brother's a Dorothy. Would you rather be called unattractive or unfunny?
Unattractive, yeah.
Which do you prefer, dogs or cats?
Dogs.
You don't have pets now?
I had cats growing up. I love cats, but I had two huskies for 15 years. They just passed away about 3 years ago, and so I haven't gotten new dogs, but I love cats too, but I've sort of become slightly allergic to cats for some reason that's developed. But also, it's just like dogs are just kind of like, you know, like cats are cool, but they don't really care, you know, they're just kind of, they're sitting there. But the dogs, I like the dogs, you know, they come to you and they make you feel like they actually care about you and stuff.
Especially now. I mean, especially if I, you know, now that we're by ourselves in this time and we're like kind of cooped up. It'd be nice to have a dog, somebody who's showing you a little affection.
Yeah, I've actually been thinking about it because I don't know how long this is going to last. And, you know, the reason I didn't get a new dog is because I'm touring pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
So I just sort of didn't really make
That'd
sense
be impossible.
Anymore. But I definitely think I could use a little fluffy fella around here right now. Wow. I wonder if I could borrow a dog for a few months. Can you do that?
I wonder.
Someone lend me a dog?
Yeah, you know what, Tom? I think you can foster dogs.
Yeah.
So you can take them for
just for 4 months and then like have literally no attachment would form. And then after 4 months, just, okay, thanks, good night, and then just give it back, you know?
Yes.
Would be impossible for me. That's the problem. Anytime I've ever even come close to having a dog in my possession for more than a minute, and then I almost, you know, adopt it right away. So that's how I got my two other dogs. We're rescues.
You have too big a heart. Would you rather be able to eat Meatloaf the food for the rest of your life or listen to Meatloaf the singer?
Meatloaf the food, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And do you ever think about how you want to be remembered, Tom? What you want people to think of you and I guess legacy, what you want your legacy to be?
I guess like you said earlier, it'd be nice if people said that. He was a funny guy. I'd like that.
Yeah. So you never had, so your ambitions have changed. I mean, is that safe to say?
You know, I was always powered and driven by fear in my life. I was always feared the idea of having to get a real job, okay?
Yeah.
So it was always just this scary idea that like, oh my gosh, if this comedy thing doesn't work out, if these videos don't catch on, I'm going to have to go like to school and like sit at a desk and probably end
up
being
what would you do you think?
I probably would have been like a telemarketer or something, you know, or working at Dairy Queen making peanut butter parfaits, which I've done and I'm very good at, by the way.
I used to work at Carvel. I was pretty damn good myself.
I made the best peanut butter parfaits at the Beacon Hill Mall because I put like extra fudge at the bottom. I put like outside of the standard amount of fudge I'd put in, especially when my friends came.
This was at Dairy Queen?
Yeah.
Did you guys have, is that when they had the helmets, the baseball helmets? Maybe that was only in the U.S.
No, they had that. They had that in Canada.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they did actually, yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I was a big Blue Jays fan for some reason. I guess it was around the time they were doing well. And
yeah.
I loved like John, yeah.
Who was it? Roberto Alomar was on that team.
Roberto Alomar, that's right. And John Olerud.
Yeah,
they had a really good team. Well, this has been so fun. I'm love talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Okay, and say hi to Christian for me. And thanks so much, man.
Will do.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye, Justin. Bye.
Bye.
So, well, that happened. Hey? Well, that happened. He is so you can hear it. It's unmistakable. I wonder if people in non-English speaking countries can hear the difference between a Canadian accent and an American accent.
I would bet they could.
Like an accent
his,
like that.
His accent is so thick that it almost sounds like he's doing a Canadian accent.
I know, yeah. You know? Yeah, he sounds like one of those guys on...
He sounds like he's doing a really good Canadian accent.
Yeah. Well, I suppose...
not so great Canadian accent.
Oh, that's not bad. There's something surreal about talking to him because I feel like I knew him so well, or I had such a clear idea of him as a kid. Do you know what I mean?
It was surreal meeting him last year.
It was.
I think the stuff he did on a show 20 years ago was more of a character than I ever thought it was. I think that speaks to what
he
a
says that.
Gifted... He does, but I think that speaks to what a gifted performer he is because at the time, he was so committed to his material, and it was... His performance was just so real seeming that I naturally just assumed that this was this guy's personality. And he was this skinny Canadian guy, fearless guy who could walk up to anybody and say anything. When in reality, he was a different kind of guy. And this was a performance that he was pushing out there.
Yeah. You can really see it when he did the interviews, like the talk show style segments on his show. Remember that when he would he kind of took a power position over Glenn. Glenn was his foil. Glenn was like the straight man to his, he was his Ed McMahon. But Glenn was like a great straight man because he was like, he was very, he was like Margaret Dumont with the Marx Brothers. He was like, oh, come on. He was like the perfect straight guy. Like you're saying, the persona that he had was very different than, let's say, the talk show he does or he did with Larry King.
Yeah.
I was almost like on guard when I did that show. I remember kind of having my guard up a little bit and get ready to comedically like jab with one another. And then when he was just very connected and...
At a certain point, I was watching the interview and I thought, is he just... doing is this like performance art Andy Kaufman shit where he's just trying to do like a totally straight Larry King impression
because
I think that's just who he is.
I think so too. We still have this image of him in our heads from like the punk rock Tom Green who's like doing fucks with people,
and he's so good at fucking with people that in like the poo on the microphone bit where he stares where he stares at their eyes
He's really committed.
He's so good at that that I think he's an amazing actor. Like, he's convinced me that this is exactly who he is.
Yeah. So you think he might still... You think he maybe was doing a bit of a Larry King bit?
And I don't think that. Yeah. I thought that at the time. But now I think that his normal personality is just more laid back and thoughtful and introspective. And the Tom Green show, Tom Green, was more of a performance.
Yeah, like for example...
He's also a kid. He's also in his 20s. You know?
But like we said, we were very, very different.
But he claims that that was a performance.
Well, it's like when he was asking me about fishing on his show. And he was like, oh, I heard you like to fish. You like to catch the fish.
That's Johnny Carson. The more you do that, the more it sounds like Johnny Carson.
Well, maybe he's more influenced by Johnny Carson, or it's a terrible impression. But he would say things like that. Do you catch the – remember when we had that back and forth, not on this show but on his, when he goes, you like to catch the bass, the largemouth bass, the perch?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I started going like, oh, yeah, I like the trout, a rainbow, maybe a brook trout.
Well, I'll catch you that, What do you call that? Your like mimicry –
Oh, maybe that's it.
Tourette's.
Maybe that's it. Or it was just like, oh, he's doing a bit now. And this whole fishing thing is a weird bit where he's like, oh. But then afterwards, after the show.
He wanted to talk about fishing.
Yeah. And he was like, hey, we should go fishing sometimes.
It's also,
I genuinely like fishing.
It's also David Letterman.
Yes. It's very Letterman.
And Letterman was influenced by Johnny Carson. They have a similar kind of cadence. Yeah. At the end, I was very happy that he said this, that he was a Dorothy. Golden Girls. And
yeah, see, I wouldn't have thought the Tom Green from our youth was a Dorothy.
No, the Tom Green from our youth would have been a Blanche.
Sophia, maybe?
I think a Blanche.
I guess so. Blanche, I'm trying to picture Blanche pulling pranks, but I think Blanche is too. Blanche has like a debonair.
Just sexual.
No, she's a good time. She's like fun loving. Yeah. But still proper. I mean, she's still a Southern lady.
That's true.
You know, so I don't think she would be putting poo poo on the end of a microphone.
Maybe more Sophia then.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Sorry to.
Well, he in real life he's a Dorothy.
Uh huh.
And you said, "Oh, my brother's a Dorothy," mm-hmm. and under his breath he goes, "Yeah," but I know that he didn't really internalize that I was a Dorothy, and he didn't agree with you. But I was really hoping that he did, and I convinced myself that he agreed that I'm a Dorothy.
Oh, like he knows
and
you that, so well.
That made my teenage dreams come true.
Well, you know, he listens to the show. It sounded like he actually does listen.
Really?
Yeah. And we should mention that Margaret, who now fans of the show will know from last week's episode. Maggie is a huge. I didn't know this until after we finished the interview.
I did not either.
She's a massive Tom Green fan. All right, I got off the phone with Tom, and she was like, she had been kind of like
hiding in the next room.
Yeah, you know, listening.
She was eavesdropping.
At the house here where we were doing the podcast. And afterwards, she was like a giddy little. I think I took a video of her and sent it to Tom just to be like, I wanted him to know that what a huge fan. I thought it was really cool.
I like that she likes him.
Yeah.
I mean, she has good taste.
Yeah, but she was really... We've interviewed how many people since I've known her? I mean, like...
She hasn't been this excited.
Never has that reaction. And, like, she was like a giddy kid. She was like a teenage. She was like red
in the
face.
It made me like her more.
Yeah. So I hope Tom's listening to this one.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Reading a letter. Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a lot of Letterman. Johnny Carson and Letterman. Yes, that's right. That's right. It's weird, wild stuff. I'm going to read it. This is from Aaron K. You like that name, Ed?
Oh,
Aaron
God.
K?
Please.
Miscellaneous comments. I can't do it. Miscellaneous comments, compliments, suggestions, and happy would you rathers. Great. Hello, Justin and Christian. I'm sure you've already gotten a million emails about this, but I hate, caps, people singing me happy birthday, especially strangers. It's so awkward and embarrassing. I think you guys are the weirdos that you actually like it. Yeah, I think, you know, I bet she's right. I bet a lot of people hate that.
It's
I don't
not
like
a right or wrong. It's just an opinion.
Not right.
And I respect your opinion, but you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun. But when they're singing to you, I feel her on that. When you're getting sung to you.
Right.
Yeah, it can be embarrassing. Mm-hmm. A whole restaurant. Yeah, I don't like it. Back to the letter. I'm from Pennsylvania, so if you think you can do a PA Dutch accent, I'd love to hear it.
Oh, God.
And laugh at it. Do you want me to try?
I bet it's going to sound a lot like your Canadian accent.
I'm trying to think.
You're thinking Amish?
No.
You're thinking of Kingpin?
I'm also thinking of Pittsburgh as a very different Farron call.
That's
who specific. Had that, that strong Baltimore accent? Who was that we were watching on?
Oh, yeah. Someone recently.
Oh, my God. It was a really thick. Oh, it was a cop on that Unsolved Mysteries show. Sorry. By the way, not an ad, but Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix.
It's back on Netflix. It's amazing.
It's so good. Okay. I can't do it. I'm not going to try, Aaron. But I would like to hear what it sounds like. I love accents. Anyways, I love your podcast, and your grandmother was the coolest guest. Now, Justin, I think it's cool how you interact differently with each guest. You do a great job of really bringing out each guest's personality. I'm not sure if that's an interview strategy or who you are as a person, but it works really well. That's such a nice compliment.
Interview strategy.
Does it make me sound phony a little bit?
No, I think it's who you are as a person.
Phony. And Christian is amazing at analyzing the interview. This is so nice. He could be a literary critic or a sociologist. Oh, sorry, a sociolinguist or something.
Sociolinguist.
That's cool.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, but you could be that.
Thanks.
I feel a little bit guilty that I haven't really been thriving during quarantine. Yeah, I don't feel guilty. With all the free time With all the free time, I'm finally getting the time to do things I never had the time to do in the past. I'm learning a new language, learning how to roller skate, completing projects I started long ago, and practicing photography. Sounds like she's doing a lot.
Yeah.
I know,
she feels guilty that she's enjoying it.
I feel that, yeah. I know not everyone has the same privilege that I do, I see. But with everything coming to a halt all of a sudden, I'm realizing that the pace I was living before was way too fast and making me unhappy. I feel lucky to be able to slow down and really enjoy life. I also have a suggestion for one of your lightning round questions. Great. All of your guests seem to either be comedians or at least highly value their sense of humor and don't care how they look. So in the question about being unfunny or ugly, everyone answers the same.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think we've had a pretty good mix of people saying...
I think she's right. Most of them say, definitely I'd rather be... thought of as unattractive.
Didn't David Harbour say, I wouldn't want people to think I'm unattractive.
And Dax Shepard.
Yeah.
I did. David maybe said that. It's very honest, whoever does say that.
I like when people say that.
Yeah,
because it it reveals something. It's honesty.
Yeah, yeah. And even that.
Not that the other people aren't being honest, but I like when people admit to vanity.
Yeah, maybe that's well said. And that says a lot about somebody who can admit to that. So anyway, maybe we'll keep it for now. Sorry, Aaron. But I was with you for a second, but that was a good argument because you're a sociolinguist. What if you ask if they – so she has a suggestion. What if you ask if they would rather be seen as ugly or unintelligent or do all three? Now, that's good. If you had to pick one, would you rather be seen as unfunny, ugly, or unintelligent?
I think unintelligent and unfunny are too connected. They're too similar.
Hmm.
So I think it would be an unfair – I don't think those are three equal things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the – you know, it's like Kanye West running for president. He's going to take votes from Joe Biden.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he's not a true independent third-party candidate.
That's true.
Which I think if the question, if we're going to add a third thing, it should be a third very different thing. But like, I associate
I
sense of humor with intelligence a lot. Like associate them a lot.
I think people who would pick either of those do as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they
we'll take it under advisement,
yeah.
Aaron.
Okay, all right, but don't let that discourage you from writing suggestions.
No,
even though we just shot down your two.
No, let's think about it.
All right.
It's a good thing to think about.
Yeah, yeah. On the topic of would you rathers, I don't remember hearing any positive would you rathers on the show, so here are a few I came up with. Positive would you rathers.
Huh. Very appropriate for a Tom Green week.
Yes, yeah.
Because there's nothing mean about him, by the way.
That's true. And you could
talk about that a bit in the conversation.
Yeah, you could argue that maybe there was. I mean, was his comedy meaner back in the day?
I think he pushed the envelope, but he talked about the difference between Americans and Canadians
and how in
Canada he would do these bits.
Yeah.
And people would enjoy it more and kind of revel in this the surreality of it.
Yeah.
And whereas in New York, he almost, you know, he got attacked when he first did that pizza bit
that
you guys talked about.
That pizza bit is so, yeah.
But he's like, right away, I realized that's a pretty big difference, that Canadians kind of enjoy the absurdity of it.
Well, again, another reason why I love Canadians, because I feel like they would have more fun with the prank element and poking fun at themselves, which is why, and I like to think that I think more like that, which is maybe why when I watched the Tom Green show, I never found it mean.
I don't think it was.
I never found it mean.
I don't think it was.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, back to Aaron's letter. Positive would you rather. I'm excited. Would you rather be able to eat whatever you want and as much as you want and stay in perfect health or always get a perfect night of sleep with really cool dreams? Ooh, that's a good one.
Eat whatever I want.
Me too. But
I think part of it is because
you value food more than...
I value delicious food more than crazy dreams, number one. And number two,
but
I... Go ahead.
Sorry, I have a counter argument to that. What if your really cool dreams involved delicious foods?
Come on.
Also, think about, you could do a lot of things in really cool dreams.
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean,
it just depends what you're lacking in your life, I guess.
Right. Okay. So you're saying, what are you saying?
Don't read too much into that.
What am I lacking?
but also, I like the challenge of getting a good night's sleep. I like the challenge. I like the ritual of, taking melatonin sometimes and making sure I have 8 hours.
Oh, add
it's a challenge. Whereas it would be nice to just shovel whatever I wanted into my body.
That's true.
And not only not gain weight, but be in perfect health.
That's true.
Like,
that'd be cool.
I wouldn't be fat on the outside or fat on the inside.
Do we look like ripped? Do we look like
No, you're just like healthy.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that'd be great. Think about it. Think about all the guilt you feel you're stoned and you have an ice cream cone. Ugh. It's hard for you to enjoy it.
Oh, by the way, shout out to Van Leeuwen. Oh, Van Leeuwen, I love you. They sent, this is not an ad even, they just sent us all this ice cream. And if you're in the neighborhood of a Van Leeuwen store, honeycomb. Or as a Canadian would say, honeycomb. Yes. Okay.
Delicious.
Thank you, Van Leeuwen. So fucking good. So vegan. Great vegan options made with oat milk. Delicious. You wouldn't know the difference. Sorry.
Okay. So I picked the eating one. Is there another one?
Yes. Would you rather be a creative genius or a scientific genius?
Selfishly, I'd rather be a creative genius, but I would pick scientific genius
because it's better for the world. Yeah,
potentially.
Oh, that's very noble of you.
It's also
you're a genius.
There's
still
a lot of creative geniuses out there that have lived.
And what does that mean? Yeah. I mean, it's all very subjective. Exactly. Even if you're a creative genius, some people might be like, "Yeah, but I fucking hate him still." Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're a scientific genius, like the things you could do. I mean, the things you could do just now. I mean, you could
also be a creative genius like Mozart and be an asshole.
That's true. Yeah.
A lot of people.
I don't want to say any of them. I don't want to say current ones because you get in trouble.
Yeah, you get the point.
Everyone knows who the creative assholes are.
Yeah. Okay. The genius assholes.
Yes. Yeah, but I'm sure there are scientific genius assholes too.
Definitely.
I think anyone
who's that good at something.
A genius. I think most geniuses are probably assholes.
You think? Do you think the genius community has the highest percentage of assholes?
Any
other community?
I'm sure. Well, maybe the dictator community.
Interesting.
I've met kind geniuses. Okay. Phil Hoffman was a genius.
So what would you guess has a higher percentage of asshole in
Bruce Springsteen
which group?
Is
which,
a genius.
Which group?
Nice.
Okay. A PTA
uh-huh.
or Mensa? Would you guess there are more assholes in Mensa?
I don't have much experience
in
either
group. Guess.
I would say there are more assholes in Mensa.
I would guess that too.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next one?
Let's see. You just made your point. Would you rather be fluent in all human languages? Oh, cool. Or be able to speak to and understand animals? These are great, Aaron.
Humans,
I'd rather be fluent, but imagine being able to speak to, this is a tough one.
Mine's easy.
Yours is human languages.
No.
Animals.
Yeah, surprisingly, because I'm more of a human person than an animal person.
Yeah.
But I think as cool as it would be to be able to go to any country and speak to anybody, you'd have to get there.
That's true.
It requires more legwork, whereas with animals, you just step outside and you talk to a whole bunch of different types of animals, different species.
Yeah,
right?
But let me counter argument. What if animals are just everything you're hearing from them and you can't turn it off? It's like, I want food.
Oh, that'd be
Give
annoying.
Me food!
Well, that's the thing. So they're not. Yeah. They have no decorum.
Well, they're all they're looking for is to like they're like or like the frogs. You meet a frog and it's in the springtime.
All right.
It's
if
like,
the question.
Oh, what a fuck.
If the
oh fuck. Hey, fuck! You want to fuck? No, you're not my species.
So if the question is, you have to understand them all the time,
yeah.
Then I would pick the human one.
Okay.
But
so
if
you can turn it on and off,
if you turn it on and off, I would do animals.
Animals.
Also,
I bet most of them.
There are a lot of people who can speak a lot of human languages. No one can speak animal languages.
Yeah, but animals.
You would be the only.
That would be cool.
One,
That'd
and
be
you'd
cool.
be able to Dr. inform. Tula. Speaking of being a scientific genius, you would be able to inform science. So much if you could understand animals.
Do you know the first thing you do if you understand animals? Immediately. What is it? Immediately.
You
lifestyle change.
You become Dr. Doolittle.
No, you become a vegan.
Oh, of course.
Right away.
Unless the animals are total assholes.
That's
if they're
true.
Like Mensa level assholes.
Even so, even if they were assholes, it would freak you out too much to eat something that you could speak with. Even to eat its eggs, to be like,
I pushed out another one for you, you dickhead.
You know what you'd have to do, though, in that case? You would just have to avoid being around cows
trying to think
and
of asshole chickens.
And think about it.
Yeah.
What are the animals you see? Squirrels,
all right, I'm a little,
woodchucks,
I'm a little
birds. You don't want to eat any of that.
That's true.
You don't have cows walking through your backyard.
That's true. You're right. I'd have to avoid
You
those.
Have to avoid pigs, cows,
fish,
chickens.
I couldn't be around a lobster tank.
Fish, yeah.
By the way, all those lobsters are like, but don't pick me. I don't want to get any. That'd be freaky. It'd be freaky to talk to animals. It'd be weird. I'm picturing now cows like, hey, I'm just chilling out here.
Is that the last one?
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah. Thanks for making the podcast. Oh, Aaron Kay, great. Thanks for your letter. What a great.
Great.
Man, I'm
gonna like positive would you rather.
I do too. You don't bother to like positive would you rather.
I was waiting. I was ready for like, what would you rather have? Like a knife up your anus or a knife in your eyeball?
It's gross.
Like,
ugh.
Oh, neither.
God. Yeah. But I guess I'd rather have one in my eyeball.
Really? Oh, definitely have it in the anus.
Well, let's say.
Really?
It would probably hurt more in your anus.
Says who?
A butt, like cutting. Oh, let's not think
about
that.
Here's the thing.
That's a terrible.
Your anus is a hole. Your eyeball is not a hole.
How about this?
That's a crucial difference.
Yeah.
You don't have to puncture an asshole. You just have to put a knife up it.
But it would cut your
probably.
Insides.
Cut but,
your in-
probably, but in but it, with the eye, it would absolutely. You couldn't
you're
avoid.
Right.
You couldn't see again. You couldn't
at,
see again.
At least you could probably get your butthole fixed.
Well, I'm glad I brought it up.
Oh man, we got to cut this part out. What a night we ended. Aaron had such a nice, thoughtful.
I know.
Well,
thanks, Aaron. And
Aaron.
And thank you to Tom.
It's being a Green, thoughtful.
The legend.
To Tom. Yeah.
Tom Green.
Yeah, we both are really flattered if you're listening to the show.
Even if you're not, we're very grateful that you did the show.
Yeah. And, I'd really like to hang out with Tom and go fishing with him up in Toronto.
That'd be cool.
We've talked about it. I'd like to do that. The lakes north of Toronto are supposed to be beautiful.
Mm.
Anyway, if you live up there, well done. And thanks for listening. And thanks, even if you don't live in Canada, thanks for listening. And thanks to, yeah, Tom.
Yeah. And we'll see you guys next week.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It's co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long.
As well as her, Megan Monaco. As senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lansey. Audio engineer is
Sergio Enriquez.
Executive producers are Marshall
Louis
and Hernan
Lopez
for
Wondery.
We'll see you next week. Be heard by you next week. Oh, sorry.
I have a new friend who's a pedophile.
I didn't either.
Duh, why did you think he was burned?
I thought he was just accidentally burned.
And then why is he such a monster to kids in their dreams?
Because that's a horrible way to die, and he probably resents what? The school for being.
Then he'd take it out on like the school administrators or like. He would only haunt like three people who were in charge of like school regulation.
No, but you can say the same thing about any haunting. Like, why does so and so haunt this house? Because she died there. She was murdered there. Why did she take it out on the guests of the house?
Well,
because she was died there.
I don't think anyone there aren't ghosts that are on the level of Freddy Krueger that like target. Ghosts don't like try to kill people in like
they
hotels.
Haunt them.
They're like woo. They like they don't haunt them. They like go.
They're like woo.
No, they travel around in their vicinity, but they're not like they're not
you're
like
really an expert on ghost
well, have haunted. You ever heard ghost stories where it was like. Somebody was, well, actually, I have heard them where they're like
I've
getting
seen,
scratched.
Movies like it?
Yeah.
All right, you don't have a point.
Well, I don't have an answer. But Freddy Krueger goes after these kids because
he's. Them.
Haunts. He kills them. High level haunting. That's funny. It is high level haunting. He kills them.
He does, yeah.
And isn't. Would that be haunting in their dreams? I guess so. So he's a ghost?
I still don't really get how he
does it.
Dreaming.
He makes them, like. Like in the dream,
it's actually a really stupid idea for a movie.
No, it's not.
It's
amazing.
A cool idea, but
yeah.
It's not logical at all.
I know, but he's there as Superman.
That's logical. If someone from another planet could,
I guess so.
It's more,
yeah,
that's logical.
It's true. How does Freddy Krueger get into a dream?
It doesn't make sense. It's like counter to physics.
He's a ghost. I mean, yeah. Well, I guess you're not supposed to think too much about it.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now!
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.